today.
Hey there, and welcome to Grapes and Grain Podcast. I'm Teeny.
And I'm Laura, and this podcast is about our favorite thing in the world.
Alcoholic beverages. So Laura, you know that I love a good brew day. Spend 8 to 10 hours at someone's house over the brew kettle, smelling all the
steamy,
delicious scents of the malts, sugary wort.
Yep.
You know, and I recently did that with my friend Justin. You were there to help us bottle our porter.
I did. I bottled that porter we had for our porter and Cab Sauv episode. Yeah.
Yeah. And he is a great example of someone who is dedicated to the art and the craft. Someone who kind of like transcends the hobby, but
he does transcend the hobby. It is borderline obsession.
Right.
But in a very beautiful way.
In a beautiful way, but you know, one level step down from going pro.
Yeah, absolutely. And his history and equipment of setup actually got us curious about people who dedicate such an extensive amount of time and sometimes money to home fermenting.
Sometimes.
Yeah, most times. Most times, I could probably safely say, to home fermenting and beverage making. So we wanted to create an episode where we dig into what is the motivation, the time commitment, the monetary investment, how you get started, are there groups or clubs, or do you fly solo with internet posts? The hows and whys of making booze at home, really.
For sure. And in my experience, it takes a combination of personal research, mentorship with an experienced brewer, and practice to make a successful brew. So although I've brewed several times, we wanted to bring in some resident experts who have dedicated a little bit more time to this than we have.
Yeah.
So I'd like to welcome Kumba Smothers and Kelly Knight to the studio. Thank you guys so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Hey, you guys. For some reason, Facebook won't let me change my name.
Yeah.
So my last name is actually Smith.
Yeah. Oh, I was like, that sounds like a jam or a jelly.
Yeah.
Because you go by Smitty too, right?
Yeah.
And I'm curious, where does that nickname come from, your last name?
Well, you know, it was just creating names for Facebook. And, you know, I really didn't want to use my full name. So,
oh, sure. I hear you. Yeah. You know, Who does?
Then they kind of put the clamps down on the one profile I had, and I had to go at least use a portion of it.
Oh, gosh.
So, yeah.
Or like restart with your real name and lose all of those connections.
Exactly. Yeah. Which, networking is a huge part of Facebook for sure.
So unfortunately, they want some type of like driver's license to change it back. And, you know, I don't think it's that serious.
Yeah.
Wow, that's like leveled up on the intensement.
Right.
Well, thank you guys again for joining us. Kumba, why don't you tell us how long have you been home brewing?
Probably 4 or 5 years now.
Okay, awesome. Mm-hmm. Kelly?
About 6 years for me.
And you've been, you're the winemaker of the group.
Yes.
Yeah, that's so cool because I've met a lot of home brewers, but I've not met a lot of home winemakers. So I'm really excited to have you in today.
Yay.
Yeah, and we cannot wait to learn more. But before we do, we have a segment every episode where we ask you, what you drinking?
What you drinking?
What you drinking?
Ladies first.
I brought a homemade blueberry wine.
Is that what this is in this glass?
Yes, blueberry.
Oh, uh-huh. I thought it was a Pinot Noir. Why did I overhear that? Blueberry. Yes.
Look at the beautiful color.
And I also brought a Sauvignon Blanc.
Okay.
Something a little more traditional.
So tell us a little bit about this blueberry wine that we're drinking. What are we smelling? What are we tasting?
Is this fresh fruit? Frozen fruit? Did you grow
this fresh fruit? I always use fresh. And I like to get the ripest fruit. And so when the season comes in for blueberries, it's a nice time to go pick the freshest you can find or go pick somewhere yourself if you have it local.
Wow.
Yeah, but I think I pick those from Whole Foods.
Fresh off the platform. Yeah.
That's right. So I add a little bit of raisin in with it. And what that does is it just gives it a little richer flavor.
That
and
red
a little
wine
more
flavor.
Yes, and a little more body.
Mm.
So, that's going to be the closest thing I've made from fruit to taste like
delicious.
An actual red wine.
I will say this does not taste like a fruit wine. This tastes like an actual red wine.
Yeah.
This is delightful.
A really nice acidity and a nice dry finish.
Mm-hmm.
How old is this wine?
That one's about 4 years old.
Wow. I didn't realize you could age fruit wine like that. I thought they're more delicate like Pinot Noirs. Is it just because there's more sugar you can with fruit wines?
I think when you're making it at home, it's more about the bacterial issues.
Oh.
So we don't put a lot of, what would you say, preservatives in, less sulfites, things like that help keep bacteria away.
Yep.
So the fruit wines are going to be lasting about 4 to 5 years, and then you're probably done with those.
Oh, wow. Well, that's still a pretty decent window.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Neato. And great. Then so this is a Sauv Blanc you brought as well?
Uh-huh. And a Sauvignon Blanc, yes. And that is actually from a kit that that's one of the first ones that I ever made.
Oh, really?
In 2014 when I first started making wine.
One of my 2019 bucket list goals is to buy a kit and ferment a wine kit for the first time. Because I've done ciders and I've done mead and I've done beer, but I've never done a wine. So I would really love to play around with that this year. Wow. Thank you. This is delicious. Thank you so
much.
Those
are both freaking delicious.
Yay, good.
Fabulous. Well, Kumba.
What you drinking?
Yes. What you drinking? What'd you bring for us today with the beer?
All right, so I brought three. One that we're drinking now is a brown ale with a Viennese cinnamon. Some, and I put some sweet potato in it and some maple vanilla as well. So I usually make this around Thanksgiving.
This is, my gosh, it tastes like a sweet potato pie. That is so yummy. Yeah.
So the go-to is, I try to put some roasted pecans in there, but the flavor doesn't really kind of, stand up with the other flavors. For some reason, that one fades out pretty quickly. So,
I've heard that too in infused vodkas and liquors too. When you do it with fruits and nuts, pecans, one of the more delicate.
Yeah, it is.
Flavors.
It is. This is so delicious though. It's like
I enjoyed it.
It's like at the top of like a sweet potato souffle or like
it's got like that burnt caramel kind of sweet notes, but it's very also savory because of the. Is there actual sweet potato in it?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Wonderful. Oh. Awesome.
Yeah.
What? Is that what you have? Do you have some?
No,
yeah.
I got nothing.
Oh, Lordy.
That's terrible.
Oh, here's an empty solo cup.
Hey,
here's
a.
Yeah, Kelly, did you have some of this? Did you want to try it too?
I have some. It's delicious.
Yes. Amazing.
Absolutely. Appreciate
All right,
that.
What else can we expect to be imbibing today? Right.
And I also brought a double IPA, Celestial
double
Beams.
IPA.
It's made with El Dorado, Mosaic, and Galaxy.
Oh no, Gamal El Dorado and Galaxy. And, yum.
Also have a breakfast stout. It's more of like my take on a Mexican breakfast stout because I use some peppers, some cayenne peppers, cinnamon, some chocolate, and coffee.
I love your preference for cinnamon.
Me too.
Those sound amazing.
Because cinnamon's kind of a risky thing that really like doubles down in flavors with mead and as you like ferment, but you've seemed to have balanced it really delicately and really well with your flavors.
It takes practice.
Yes. Cinnamon can be polarizing.
Definitely. Now, before we jump too deep into the questions, do you guys have like brands that you brew or make wine under that people might know around town or have seen at any of the local home competitions or anything like that?
I don't actually. I've tried just different kits, but most of what I do now is more fruit based, so it's just fresh fruit.
Okay, cool.
Oh, yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, really for me, it's I do a good number of competitions, and so really my stout, Triple Stage Darkness is pretty popular. My porter, out of order porter, and the short order porter was brewed from Martin House recently, so. That one won their shootout last year, and so they brewed that one up. So those are probably my most like known beers.
Yeah. Very cool. Claim to clout.
Awesome.
It's really cool.
It's so cool that brewers have competitions around here.
Yeah.
Like that. We winemakers don't have anything that here.
I've heard of very few. I've had the opportunity to potentially judge a North Texas Beverage Committee wine, but it's mostly like people in college. And it's just not like super known about in the same way that these brewer or even like barbecue competitions or a lot of other culinary competitions are known about.
Yeah.
At least in Texas, maybe out in California and Oregon and stuff. Surely it is more.
I think in North Carolina, they have some big winemaking workshops and some challenges and stuff like that, too. But I don't know about Blue Bonnet. I've heard that they actually might have a few people that make wine and take theirs in for judging there.
Oh, very interesting.
I'm not
sure. We were talking about Blue Bonnet a couple days ago.
Yeah, I haven't been personally, but I need to go check it out.
I haven't either. I'm hoping to help judge a little bit because it's like one of the biggest home brew competitions in the nation.
We can check off some hours for your
BJCP
certifications. We were discussing in a previous episode.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for coming, bringing all these delicious libations. Kelly, let's start with you. You've been home winemaking for 6 years. What made you want to start doing it in the first place?
I always wanted to do it back in college. My first little brewing experiment was when Mr. Beer first came out, and this was like in '90s, I think, a while back. And I bought one of those and dabbled with them for like a couple of months. And it was back then; it was so rudimentary. It wasn't like what you guys have now to brew with. It was so basic. And I was like, God, I wish I could make wine. And all these years later, I was with my husband at the, what was it? Toymaker's Wine Shop or something like that. Winemaker's Toy Store is what it was.
Yeah. That's quite one of the bigger ones in the area.
Yeah.
That's who, before I found you, that was going to be my last ditch effort to try to find a home winemaker. I just like call him up and be like,
well, George, who owned that, actually passed away.
How recently was that? Like in the last year?
The holididays, I believe.
Oh, no. Yeah. So that's when I was out of the country. I'm so sad to hear that.
Yeah. So I'm sad
I never got to meet him in person.
Yes. Wow. And George, yeah, he is the
life
one.
Life is short, you guys. Yeah. Go make the connections.
Totally.
He is the one that actually got me to do it. So we were in the store. My husband was buying brewing equipment because he wanted to brew. And I was like, well, let's just go buy it for you. Let's just do it.
Yeah, yeah. Let's just live our lives to the best possible and just brew some beer, damn it.
Yeah. So while he was perusing, I was talking to George, the owner, who had been a home winemaker forever.
Right.
And we were discussing old vine world wines and stuff like that and what we like. And he brought out a bottle of Amarone that he had made years ago. And he said, this is one that I made. Try it. So we opened it in the store and sipped on it. And I was like, oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Lovely.
Why am I not doing this? So next thing I know, we're walking out with kits.
Yeah. You
know? $500-$600 later.
Like, I can smell this a mile away. You should taste this wine.
Yes.
Yeah. Let me open this bottle for you.
That's how he would rope you in. Yeah.
That's amazing.
I heard he was charming like that.
Very. Yes.
Oh, I love it. Well, Kumba, did you come into this on your own as well, or did you have friends that brought you into it through the industry, to the fermenting fold? How'd you stumble into it?
More or less Facebook, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because you know, I got friends in Jersey, and so...
I got friends in low places.
Exactly. So, you know, one of my friends, Mike Jones, was...
Mike Jones.
And so he was homebrewing, and so as I was getting into craft beer, I started to really love the flavors and, like, you know, how can I make this? And then so I was talking to him one day. I was like, hey, I'm thinking about, like, homebrewing, and, like, he said, so what's stopping you?
Oh, I love those, like, challenging mentors that are like, what the fuck's holding you up?
Right, right. So, you know, that
was... Good for him, good for you.
Yeah, so that was basically when it all, the obsession started, basically.
Mm-hmm. Great.
So,
well, can you tell me a little bit, like, what was your setup when you first started homebrewing, and what does your system look like today?
Setup when I first started, it was a brew in a bag. So it was just
in a bag.
Exactly. It was a bag. It was just a nylon bag and a pot, basically.
Interesting. And what year was that? When you
4 years ago?
You said four. Wow. Yeah, so recent.
4 years ago. And so really, you know, the very first batch was extract. So, you know, you basically have your little steeping grains
as well. Yeah.
And your extract and never forget, you know. So I was making like a little half batches because I was like, I don't want to make 5 gallons.
For sure.
5 pounds of mediocre beer.
Oh, it is.
Convincing how many outer circles of your friends, like, no, try this. Try this. Homebrew is good. It's good.
You know, so what happened was I'm sitting there and I'm going through it. I'm steeping my grains. The boil's going. And, you know, I was doing a porter. And so, you know, I ripped the hops bag open. I dumped the whole thing in there. Boom. And I looked down at the sheet. It said a quarter ounce.
Yeah. What was that, like, multiple ounces, probably?
No. One ounce for like a 2.5 gallon batch.
So it wasn't a porter anymore.
Yeah, it was.
It's a dark IPA.
Yeah, it was just crazy terrible. Yeah. And so,
Man, that sounds intriguing. Yeah. I would try it.
So what I did was this: I saved a bottle, you know, saved a few bottles, and had one every like October, November. And that beer sucked. So it was terrible. So
it was consistently terrible.
Exactly.
That's what we can say about that beer.
So what is your homebrew setup like today?
Now it's basically, I'm still doing the same, you know. So I like have a few kettles, and I basically just do a no sparge, you know, some simple.
No sparge, okay.
Yeah. So it's just basically it's just really full volume mashing, you know, and so you just full volume and just drain them and then boil.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay, I don't have any experience with that. So that is really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about you, Kelly? What does it take to make wine at home? What did you start with and where are you at now?
Well, I started with just kind of a starter kit that had a 6 gallon carboy and a bucket. And
those are the big, like, those big Ozarka, like, water bottles. Yeah,
exactly. Very heavy. Yeah. And so you
Funny story. I broke my left hand moving one of those.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, my gosh.
I was moving it with my right hand, holding it by the neck, and I dropped it. And as I was slipping it into a metal pot. A brewing pot, and the lip of the bottle bent my hand over the lip of the... broke my hand, yeah. So, brewing injuries, that was, oh my God, so long ago. That was maybe 10 years ago.
I have that in the back of my head every time I pick up the carboy.
Use your core, my conscientious movements. Yes. It is. I mean, it's, you know, with any physical activity or laboratory experiments, it can be dangerous at times.
In my case, I use my husband for that portion.
But yeah, big carboy. Wow, that's a big...
started with the 6 gallon. So that'll give you roughly about 30 bottles of wine if you're good at racking.
How was your first wine? How was your first 30 bottles? Was it...
It was at one of the Sauvignon Blancs. I think that was my second batch.
Yeah,
and it turned out pretty good.
I feel like this Sauvignon Blanc, it's like a little more caramely and like a little less acidic, and it would do really well with like some Asian food, like we were doing with the Thai food, you know?
Goes
like
very well with Asian. Yes, absolutely.
This wine in particular.
Thai food.
Yum.
So do you still use that setup or have you evolved to a bigger
Well, I started
kit?
Out with that and then I quickly became, as he said, obsessed. You just start buying and buying and buying.
For sure. Both of us had towed the line and started tumbling headfirst into it and we're like, pull back the reins. Like, we just can't quite yet. But we've each, I mean, it's...
Well, with wine, too, it takes so long to be able to drink it. So you're talking about a minimum of a year and better every year after that. So you're sitting there going, well, that's going to take me a year. I might as well just keep making one. So I would just every two, 3 weeks
put the investment into the equipment, the time. Yes,
that's
just
crazy.
Keep doing it.
So I went from the one and then I ended up with like 15 1 gallons.
Oh,
I looked like a crazy chemist after a while because I was just like, I'll just do little ones and all different flavors.
Well, you are a chemist at that point. If you're doing 1 gallon at a time, you're taking tasting notes, you're keeping a journal, you're deciding how what you do affects the flavor of what you're making, and then you really fine-tune what you want to make. So that makes perfect sense.
So you like you don't have to have much space to start. It's very similar to brewing. So if you know how to do that, you can have a closet. You can have just a corner of your kitchen.
Maybe hopefully a slightly climate controlled closet.
Slightly climate controlled even and same with wine, you need to keep it upper 60s, low 70s, and it needs to stay consistent because it messes with the flavors. Just like with beer. But you started with this little corner, and then I ended up with this whole room full of equipment everywhere. And it, I mean, just like all these colors and flavors. And because once I got into fruit, I just went nuts.
That's so
cool.
How did
we get here?
I've actually had fruit wines a handful of times, but mostly in Nashville. So it's a very sweet southern thing.
Very sweet. Mine are not sweet.
No, I was going to say, like, sweet is in the sense of like sentimental, but also sweet. You're right. They are typically very sweet, but yours are not. Yours are very palatable and very delicious, where I'm getting the flavors of the fruit and the blueberry, but without like the cloying, attacking sweetness.
Or the syrupy flavor.
The viscosity, the syrupiness.
So I've done everything from like kiwi, orange, pineapple, watermelon, all kinds of flavors.
Watermelon, I heard, was a really popular one too.
I only have two that didn't turn out well that I didn't like, and one was watermelon. And I don't know why. It just had a
watermelon beer was one of the first ones you did, too.
It just had a funky flavor. It did something weird in fermentation. You
know? Not funky fresh, but just funky.
Funky, And but the berry ones, blueberry, raspberry, strawberry, all of those turn out, blackberry, they all turn out really good. You can't go wrong with those. And I like to sparkle those, too, so I have some still versions. So it's great with brunch or
totally. So those are obviously fruit wines. You like making them.
Yes.
What are you currently making?
Just the fruit. I'd like to make a cider. You mentioned that.
Which is basically like apple wine. Fermented apple juice.
I mean, I've done pear wine and I've done apple wine, but I haven't done an actual cider yet. So I would like to do that.
Okay.
So that's my next project.
Very cool.
And what are you currently brewing at home, Kumba?
I got so much stuff going on right now.
Tell us all about it.
So this basically starts competition season. I got some stuff at Blue Bonnet. Sent off some stuff for Imperial Yeast competition. So I got a stout going now that I'm cold crashing. Just brewed a porter yesterday.
Ooh.
I made a porter about a week or so ago, but I used a different yeast.
Interesting.
And so I usually use just like a plain ale yeast, American ale, but I decided to do Irish ale yeast. And so. Mm.
And what do you expect to be the difference?
So the difference is it's a lot more esters.
The Irish one or the non-Irish one?
Irish.
Wow, really? Yeah. Okay.
So it came off a little more fruitier. So it's still a good beer, but for the category.
Not exactly what you're honing in on.
Right. So I did a batch last night, a porter. So, tap right now, I have a pale ale, two stouts. And
on tap, do you have like a kegerator at your house? Tell me about this.
I hope every avid home brewer has a working kegerator at home.
With wine on one of the taps.
Yeah. Something for everyone.
So I basically made a keezer, So I took this chest freezer, built a collar, put some taps on it.
Okay.
I forgot to put the return springs on it, so one day, somebody hit the tap handle, and it was barley wine all over the garage. So.
How many taps do you have in said kegerator?
Four.
That's a good amount.
Yeah, it is.
So how many, barrels of beer do you have in, either fermenting or brewing in your house at one time?
I mean... A barrel is a lot of beer.
Gallon. I'm sorry. I'm just using conventional.
A liter of cola.
What is like the best metric when we're talking about homebrewing?
Yeah.
I mean, in the States, we use, gallons, different countries are more metric, don't use that. So.
Sure. Of course. But, so how many gallons of beer might you have at your house right now?
I usually try to keep three on a tap. And so once I get kind of tired.
Which is like one of those pony kegs, right?
Yeah, about five gallons.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
I'll roughly have about 15. Sometimes I have these little 3-gallon kegs.
I see.
So that way I could split a big batch and, if I want to do different flavors with, same base.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. That's so scientific. I love that. Set your base, set your variables, set your different flavors, where you're coming from that base recipe.
Right.
That's great.
And then from there, I'll can some stuff and share with friends and stuff. So.
Yeah, you better. Any home brewer or home winemaker out there is not sharing with your friends. Yeah.
Well, and that's really interesting that you mentioned the home canning. Mm-hmm. So you do that at your house? Yeah. What goes into that?
Cans and beer.
Do you have an actual system?
Is it like glass bottles and the crimpers? And I've heard about plastic bottles of screw tops.
Yeah, correct. I've never
heard about cans
those.
At home. Yeah. So, I've only heard about cans commercially.
So basically, it's really the same machine that they use for crowlers.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
So it's a
polarizing crowlers.
Yeah. So basically, you can buy the cans from in any cellar, but it's just cans is just so much better. They're lighter. They keep the sun out. So,
yeah. All the light contamination, which stales the beer. Is that what it is?
Oxidizes it. Skunks it.
Exactly. Wow.
Skunks it up.
Yes.
That's the official off flavor term, Laura.
Well, I was trying to be official. That's why I put my official stank on it. Skunks it up.
Yeah. So So it was basically me and two guys went in and bought a canner and
that's a great idea.
And then we share that.
Wow.
So we can stuff and swap stuff.
That's amazing.
Send stuff across the country.
Is that why bottled beer is dark or green?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. Wine as well. Olive oil as well. Yeah. Chip bags as well.
That's why you should never really
on the inside.
You should never really drink a Corona because there's no stability in that beer.
No, that's why they taste like piss.
I've been scammed.
Okay. Before we take our break, I want to ask you each: what is either the most interesting or the most challenging varietal or style you've ever made?
I guess for me. The funnest one was when I did a wild plum. I was able to go out to a friend's ranch and actually pick them fresh.
Cool.
And where was that? In Texas?
Yeah, it was kind of east of Wichita Falls area.
Sure.
and picked them out there and then brought them home. And then those are no fun to try to squeeze juice out of.
Wow,
because
they are
little bitty and they're really weird on the
very
inside.
Very high ratio from pit to flesh.
Exactly.
Very clingy to the pit.
Exactly.
Yes.
So it was quite an interesting feat trying to get the juice out of those and pressing with my hands and squeezing.
Yeah, okay. So when you're making... do you hand juice all of the things?
So you can use a juicer. And you can have all juice if you want. Or you can boil the fruit. And I use like paint strainers that I get from Ace Hardware or wherever and put the fruit in and then boil it.
Wow. Yeah. And which is like a cheesecloth, but finer?
Cheesecloth, essentially. Yeah, just to keep the fruit in there. Right. And boiling is more, it's kind of an easier way to do it, and it's less expensive.
Does that also, I have read somewhere maybe like releases more pectins?
What are pectins?
Pectins are like the jellifying agent in the skins. It's like another chemical compound that kind of causes coagulation or congealment, like that makes jellies or but with other fruits outside of grapes, like blueberries are very high in pectin, berries are typically very high in pectin. So that's interesting, as you would make heat these berries to make the wines. It would probably release a lot of that.
It does, and then you have to use like a pectic enzyme it's one of your ingredients.
To engage it. Like a fining, kind of?
It's an additive that you would add in there, and it helps to drop the pectin during fermentation.
So it's more like it's a little thinner, so you can drink it more as like a actual like wine instead of it being like a syrupy mess.
Right. Well, and then, and it just pulls, like if you're doing a freshly squeezed orange and it has pieces of the orange in there, the pulp.
Clings to it to weigh it down.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But I have the enzyme that makes it drop. And then, I mean, the blueberry that you're drinking was... boiled that.
It's so clear, too. It's fine.
If you use more of the fresh juice, it does taste different. It has a more bolder juice flavor.
I like the juiciness to it, though.
As opposed to more of the dryness of, like, a wine.
Sure.
So it will change the flavor depending on what you do.
So what ended up happening with this plum wine?
So we brought that home and made that. I had no idea what plum wine tasted like, or wild plum. Because it doesn't taste like your typical Japanese plum
wine. Yeah, wild, if any fruit doesn't taste like the cultivated version.
Yeah, and I know that wild plum jelly is very popular in the South, and it's really yummy. And so I was like, well, why not try that? But it took a year to determine if I was going to like it or not. And it turned out great.
Excellent.
It is one of my favorites.
Happy ending. Yeah.
But the funniest story is when I had, I was making raspberry and I was trying to force carbonate in the bottle and I wasn't doing it a traditional
like
way.
Like secondary fermentation.
Yes. Add a little bit of sugar at the end.
Uh-huh. And, did you try to shake it up and put some CO2 in it at the same time to double down?
Well, I've done it with a machine, actually force carbonating that way. But some of them where I wasn't really sure if I wanted to carbonate them or not, or keep them still with the fruit ones, I would just add a little extra sugar in there.
They would decide themselves.
And then they decide themselves.
They just wanted to explode like wine grenades.
That's where I'm going with this. Yeah. They were about 2 weeks of, I had this designated room that's next to my bedroom.
Uh-huh.
And they're
sounds
all
like a
on shelves.
War zone.
Oh, yeah. So 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, you hear this pop. And then you're like, hear this thing, this cork shooting all the way across the bedroom, over the bed, into the hallway, on the wood floor, clunk, 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 and then this is spewing everywhere.
That's so funny. So,
that was my raspberry.
Sticky mess.
Yeah. Sticky mess.
That's amazing. All right, Smitty, your turn. Most interesting or most challenging thing you've ever brewed?
I mean, the most challenging so far was the barley wine. You know,
because because
you got to use so much pounds of grain to get like, you know, use like 30 pounds of grain for like a 5-gallon batch.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that. Wow. I didn't realize that was unique.
That's
to that
exorbitant.
Style.
No wonder they're always so not only highly boozy, priced, but highly
and,
priced.
Very sought after.
Right. Because, you know,
I didn't realize.
Yeah. Because basically, like most brewers would just take the first runnings because that's where we're getting all that sugar from. So, and then on top of that, you're doing like a 2, 3, 4, sometimes a 4-hour boil on it.
Wow, that seems long.
Yeah, and then on top of that, you know, you want to age that beer.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, so typically...
Big investment time, storage space, aging.
Yes, yeah, so it, you know, it goes from more like a double IPA to like a more of like a port of sherry type flavor. It really depends on like what style.
Yeah.
If you do the American, it's more just like a... you know, strong ale. But if you do English it, you know, you'll get some like sherry characteristics from the yeast and stuff. So
what about this barley wine that you made? What was that like?
I only got 6 bottles left. So right now, I mean, I can see where the English flavors were really starting to come on, because I brewed it back in October.
Okay. So that's like, that's not that long. Last October?
It's not that long, but it's a minute, but it's not that long.
Okay, I was thinking maybe longer.
No, so that was my first one. So it's kind of like, you know, my buddy Sean was like, hey, you know, you've been doing all these little simple beers. Exactly. You know, do a barley wine. So I was like, you know.
Challenge accepted.
Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, so I'm brewing and sitting there brewing. I'm like, all right, this is going good. Next thing you know, I kegged it, and that was when that fatal day happened. You know, just barley wine all over the floor. You know, my dog wasn't very happy. So.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. So like, you know, Cooper. Now. Yeah. So like now I have like 6 bottles left. So I took them, I bottled them up, because like, you know, because the goal was to just carb it and then bottle it and then store it. You know. So
sure.
Right.
So now I'm gonna probably wait until October or so to pop one. So
totally. Wow. That's the definition of like a rare vintage. Because like so much was lost
along the way.
Yeah. You know, my soul poured all over the.
Why not on the curb? Yeah,
we feel for you.
Exactly.
All right. Well, let's refresh our
let's refresh and refresh our drinks
and take a quick break. We'll be right back. Hey, y'all! Thanks for listening to Grapes and Grain Podcast. We love making this show, and we hope you enjoy listening to it too.
That's right, and we want to give a huge shout out to our very first Patreon donor, Jeremy.
Whoop whoop! Jeremy was so kind to pledge at the happy hour date level, which means he gets a shout out on air, as well as an invitation to our postseason happy hour.
If you want a shout out on air, you can pledge as a drinking buddy, and to be invited to our end of season happy hour, donate at the happy hour date level. And to really knock our socks off, our top tier is Pick Your Poison, where donors can pick a topic for an upcoming episode.
Go to patreon.com/grapesandgrain to pledge your monthly contribution today.
Cheers, y'all.
No Fleo involved.
Oh god, don't record that.
Don't let him hear that.
We got a ringtone.
Yeah. Oh goodness gracious. Well, thank you so much for joining us for the first half of the episode. I hope you enjoyed your break. We certainly did.
Yeah, sure. Got to refill our glasses. We are trying the IPA that Kumba brought. Mm-hmm. And this is the double IPA?
Yes.
Oh, can I take a sniffy poo?
Sure.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. It's very like light, not very malt forward.
No, really, I mean, I enjoy Northeast New England style, but I can't drink more than one because, sure. You know, like a lot of them are like so cloying and very full. So
very sweet.
So when you say cloying and full, you're not talking about sweetness. Like, what are you talking about exactly?
I am talking about sweetness.
Sweetness and cloying are like hand in hand.
You know, sweet kind of coats the a palate. So I like to keep mine a little more dry, you know, because
I like that.
Because that way, you know, you'll want to drink more.
Yeah, because the last episode that we recorded, I was drinking a tiki milkshake IPA, and I was like, this is pineapple juice.
Yeah.
Like, it was.
There was very juicy. For as many hops were in that brew, I could not taste any of them. You know, and maybe I did in the sweetness flavors, but there was zero bitterness. So. Right.
And, you know, I'm fine with, with that style. So I'm not trying to, you know, shit on the style, but it's just like, you know, I can't drink, you know, like a whole bunch. You know, I do want a little. Little bit of dryness, a little bit of bitterness,
Agreed. That's exactly what I feel a lot about other styles like ciders. I love ciders, but give me a dry cider or give me nothing because I can't with that sweet cider.
Totally.
You know? Exactly. I get it.
Well, bringing it back from the break, Kelly, I kind of want to talk to you because I know very little about the winemaking process, especially at home. So how does it work and how long does it take you to make something and ferment it into something worth drinking?
Yeah. Are you picking your own grapes, stomping them yourself, like starting with extract?
Well, we talked a little bit about like the fruit.
Talk us through one of your fermentation days.
Okay. So, well, if you're super fancy and you have some money, you can grow your own grapes and crush and do all that stuff, which I'm not super fancy.
Cute. Iggy Azaleas, I'm so fancy. Yeah.
Most people living near downtown Dallas do not have any sort of space for that.
I don't have room for a vineyard in my tiny little half of an acre, if even that, a quarter of an acre, whatever that is on my house. So, you can buy juice that's already pressed, essentially. I have ordered grapes from California, and
I heard you can do that from like bulk winery. Yeah. Oh, it's probably from that Central Valley, like we were talking about mass-produced grapes.
It's not Sonoma or Napa. It's further south.
Yes,
it's like
San Juan
Capistrano, possibly area. Yeah. Somewhere in there is where mine came from, and I ordered fresh cab grapes.
Yes, very cool.
Yeah, and I took it again. You know, the winemaker's toy store, they actually had a system there where you could order through them and then they would crush it.
Wow.
But I was able to come up and do it with them or myself and they helped essentially.
Excellent.
So I wasn't able to do that. Or you can buy the kits where it already has the juice and then you just do what
syrups.
You want with it.
Yeah, the like sugary syrups.
Well, not the syrups. These are actual like it's grape juice.
Oh, it's just like grape juice.
Like and you choose what flavor, you know, Sauvignon Blanc or Cab or Pinot, whatever kind you want. And they have tons of kind. You can buy these online.
Okay.
You can buy them. I think Homebrew Headquarters has some in stock here in Dallas, in Richardson.
That's North Dallas, right?
Yeah. It's in Richardson. Yeah.
Okay.
But you can find those where the it's already pressed for you, but you get to do whatever you want with it. You can add your tannins if you want. You can add oak chips or spirals. You can do all kinds of stuff to change it. Add raisins. You can make it whatever you want. Yeah.
And add your raisins.
Acids, blends.
Put a bird on it.
Exactly. Yeah. Or if you're doing fruit, like we were talking about earlier, you can bring home your fruit, you can press it and have your fresh juice there, or you can cut it into chunks and then you can boil it and you put it in a straining bag. So your primary fermentation takes about a week to 2 weeks. You just have to kind of follow it, do gravity readings.
Yep. Which we did a touch of when we were bottling your porter as well.
And so how long does it typically take you to, from juice, whatever, however, to something that you want to drink? I know you brought us something that is 6 years old.
Right. So depending on the type, white wines you can drink a little earlier. Okay. Reds, they're going to, like I have my fresh cab is still, it's been 3 years and it's still not drinkable yet. So it just depends. The reds just take a lot longer.
That's always like one of those tasting notes you hear. You're like, oh, it's a great cab. It's quite young. And you're like, young is like a bomb of a word where you're like, stay away. young, sharp tannin, sharp acids, sharp corners. For sure.
Yeah, and with being a home winemaker, the longer you wait, the better. And it just takes a lot of patience. So you go and you buy wine.
For sure.
And
you gotta have that patience.
And drink friends' beer while
any
you're
fermentation.
Wine. Yeah.
Making kimchi to wine to beer to kombucha. Patience is key.
Yeah. Sure. But with brewing, you have like a long process up front when you're.
It is invested up front. It's so true. Brew days is a loaded work.
It's a long day. With wine, I could do my first process in an hour and a half. And then in another week or two, I've got another hour and a half. And then, you know, a month from then, I'm going to rack again and I'm going to taste a little bit. And I might need to add a little something here and there.
So
and
it really is a waiting game for
it's
you.
It's a waiting game. Mm. And then throughout the year, you're going to rack several times just to help with
And when you
oxygen.
Say rack, what exactly do you mean?
I'm going to
disturb the bottle?
Well, I'm going to say I have my glass carboy. Yeah. I'm going to rack that into another one. So
you take the liquid off of the sediment and put it into a new bottle so
into
it can settle
carboy.
Its sediment again.
So it's aging and the sediment drops to the bottom and you're
and those
also
weird,
adding
those sediments
some
don't
some
add
sulfites.
Weird flavors because they don't sit on those weird flavors of like the dead stuff for extra long.
Yes.
And you add sulfites, you said, when you do that?
So you're adding your Camden tablets or what we use.
Okay.
So you're just trying to prevent bacteria.
Right.
And keep it
crucial.
At a minimum. Yeah, because your wine will go bad. So,
And because it's not fortified yet, where it's like stable, where you can just open it and leave it on the shelf for months to years at a time. It's still wine.
Yes, and a lot of the commercial wineries, they're using more preservatives. Home winemakers, if you don't want a lot of allergens and things that could cause issues with people and tannins and all that, you have the choice of not adding that much to it.
Hmm.
But you do have to rack it more, and you have to kind of stay on top of it a little bit more.
Totally.
That's good to know that investment goes in the back
absolutely.
End of
so you have some home winemakers or winemakers or drinkers that can actually drink homemade wine that have allergy issues with commercial wineries.
Ah.
And a lot of that has to do with the preservatives.
Interesting.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Well, it does make sense.
Smitty, I'm interested to talk to you about your brew day, because you said that you don't sparge most of the time.
No.
So walk me through your traditional brew day and like tell me a little bit about the difference between sparging and not, like what that affords you.
I mean, basically, you know, if you're doing like a full fly sparge, that adds on about, 45 minutes, about an hour.
Sure. Because you have to, sparging, as we've talked about before, is adding more water to expunge the sugars from the grain.
Yeah, I was going to say, sure, yeah, so, but no, I'm not going to play it cool. So that's an extra step that adds 45 minutes because you add water to an
and you got to bring it back up to
drain it down. Okay, I got you now.
And so really,
I'm on the same page.
And so really what you can do if you want to cut down time, you know, you can batch sparge, which is basically just going in with about half the amount of water, draining that, adding the other half that's, you know, been like warmed up to like maybe 160, 175 or whatever. So it's really, you know, when you do that first drain, you've pretty much mashed out. You pretty much got all your sugars you want. You're basically just like rinsing the grains. So, I mean, that adds about an extra 10, 15 minutes. But with no sparge, you just put your full volume in there and then just drain. Now you're losing efficiency. You know, maybe about 5%, you know, some people lose more. So
5% of what exactly? So, the sugars?
Okay. No. So, you know, typically they say 70% is like the average. 70% of those sugars being pulled.
Sure.
Is like a good average number that a lot of folks follow. A lot of recipes are built around 70%. And so when you like brew in a bag or you no sparge, it's been known to like lose some. So you're getting maybe about 60-65%, but you know, some folks crush finer.
Okay.
So that allows those sugars to be pulled easier. But really it's just, you know, you're saving like an hour off the, you know, day. So that's
sure.
And you're cleaning less stuff. So
absolutely. Why not? That sounds very appealing.
Yeah. I know. I'm like my kitchen sink is constantly full of dishes.
Yeah.
And the brewing process is 100% based around like sterilization of equipment and materials.
Cleanliness.
And then two, it's basically on our level, you know, you just add an extra pound or two of grains. That's just $2 or $3.
Yeah.
Really?
Okay. Yeah.
And you know, so if you need to get more sugars, you just add some more grains.
So you are upping the grain content on your recipe to account for that.
Right.
Mm. Oh, so, cool.
Yeah. So well, basically, you know, when you're hearing people screaming like, "Oh, I'm getting 80% efficiency, 90%," this is like, that's fine, but I want to be brewing and done, you know? And so it's not like I'm cutting extra corners, but it's just like if I'm spending an extra $2 or $3 to cut down on like 1 hour, I'd rather take that hour and do something else.
Definitely, because every single time that I'm involved in a brew day, I'm like, yes, I'm ready to go. We're going to get there early. It's going to be great. And I'm like, we are going to be done in 6 hours. And then hour 7 comes and I'm like, are we done yet? And then hour 8 comes and I'm like, are we still doing this? Yeah. I'm like, I should have drunk less beers at breakfast. So I always feel like I'm invested in the idea of a brew day, but when it gets down to the end of it, I'm like, this is a slog.
Yeah, because, you know, brewing beer can only, you know, if you want to look at the time you're actually doing mashing and brewing, you can be done in 2-3 hours, but it's all the cleaning and stuff that really takes that much longer. So and then, you know, if you have friends over, you know, of course you're drinking a beer, you're watching TV, you're talking, so the day does, you know, move slower. But it if it's just you have everything in place.
Yeah, you know, it is. Life always moves more efficiently when you're by yourself instead of slogged down, as you say, by
exactly.
entourage.
So you guys obviously have a lot of experience doing this in and of yourselves. Are either of you planning to do this professionally?
I mean, I would, you know, love to, because it's, you know, kind of like...
Yeah, sign me up, coach, where I put my name.
You know, I mean, because basically, you know, you get to a point where it's kind of like, all right, I want something for me, something that I can pass on.
Mm-hmm.
But just to see people enjoying the beer, it's like, all right, what if I did this as my day-to-day? Well, you know, just seeing this, you know, just like, hey, this is really good. You know, I can't believe you made this. It's like, what do you think? You know, I'm like playing all day long, so... But no, you know, so it's just really now, you know, about planning, you know, putting it on paper, seeing, you know, hey, is this feasible?
Right.
You know, then the cost starts adding up. It's like, is this really the plunge you want to take? But
yeah, what's the tipping point where it takes it from hobby to profesh?
Right. And oh, is that a question? Or?
No, yeah, no, I'm saying like, it is a question we all have to ask ourselves as we're doing this.
Well, it's a question I want to ask you because, like, how much money have you invested in your personal brewing system?
Well, not to put you on the spot, but
you don't have to like be specific.
I mean, right. I mean, because
it's an investment. It's a good word for it.
Because it's like, you know, I mean, I didn't buy like a pre-built system. You know, I like bought a pot, then I bought a second pot, I bought a third pot. And so, you know, pots got bigger. So 150 here, 200 here. So, you know, you look around, it's like, it's easy to see that, hey, I racked up over a couple grand worth, worth of stuff. I got sacks of grain at the house, kegs. I got
you're one step away from like a mill and like malting your own grain.
So it's like stuff does add up, but it's like I didn't go crazy with it, and so I kept it minimal, you know. And so it's like people are amazed that I can make good beer using just the basic stuff,
the scale that you're at,
right. And you know, I think a lot of people who buy these big systems, they look at what a lot of people are doing with the no sparge
Instagram pressure,
right? And you know, it's like, hey, you know, you can't make good beer doing this simple method. It's just like, why not?
Yeah. You should master the simple method, right. As like all the cooks in the kitchen say, if you can't make an egg, like you can't cook. Yeah,
you know,
you should be able to master it in a simple situation.
But still, it's kind of like, all right, you know, I'm making good beer, but it's fortifying hearing that, you know, my friends and peers are saying, you know, you're making really good beer.
That is. Yeah.
I think you make great beer.
I
appreciate that.
It smells great. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, what do you do on the daily?
What I do, I work for a broker dealer and I'm a relationship manager. So
nice. Awesome. Yeah. I could use one of those.
Well, what about you, Kelly? Are you ever planning to go pro? What do you do for your 9 to 5?
Well, I just graduated with my master's in counseling, so it has nothing to do with...
Congratulations.
But I hear that a lot of counselors drink a ton of wine, so
I've heard that a lot of... You should maybe market and brand specifically a brand to counselors.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
Pinot Grigio.
Yes. I love it. Oh, no.
Cabernet Sauvignon.
Oh, God, yeah. So, yeah, okay, but we should really let's talk later. Yeah.
Well, we don't really have, for winemakers here in Dallas that I know of, we don't really have a huge network to pull from, which is a bummer. I would love to have that. And when I first started, I tried to get a group together.
You told me that. Yeah.
When I first reached out to you. Clubs, where you can go and you can network with people and you can learn from each other and you do it together. It just makes it more fun. I tried, and I got a lot of people over to my house to do it, and they just ended up
drinking free wine. Yeah. I love free wine. What do I have to invest time and money? So, I'm not into it anymore.
And slackers. In the week. Slackers.
And there is. There always is. That's like the first slackers, level of filtering people that are new to like homebrewing. Yes. Is that like, am I like out of step to say that?
Because no,
I
was you're not.
In some very inaugural groups of like the Dallas homebrewing clubs, and it was like you had a couple screening meetups. Mm-hmm. Yes. To get the lushes out of there to see who is actually ready to invest in a brew day.
Yeah, and wine, it takes so long that people who want instant gratification are just like, a year? Are you kidding? I'm not doing that.
There's nothing there for them.
Yeah. So you have to be committed, and you have to study a lot, and you have to read a lot. But if you're like you guys are talking, if you're a nerd, you geek out on this, it's really easy to do.
But
what I think would be super cool, because we have such a great brew scene here now with all the breweries that are opening and the clubs and the competitions and all that, if they would open it up a little bit for craft winemakers. Or maybe a brewery would let
give
me
them
have
an
like,
opportunity.
Yeah, to have like a little, you know, a
corner
fruit
kiosk.
Wine on Sundays to serve with their little brunch menu.
Sure. I actually think that's a great idea.
You should contact a lot of, like, I feel like 60 Vines, a lot of other places.
Well,
like
I feel like that's a great idea for a couple of reasons, because there are a lot of people who go to breweries and complain like there's nothing there for non-beer drinkers.
Hey, hands up right here. Yes. Actually, I was living in Australia for the last 8 months, and I loved that the breweries all fermented a cider. Every single one of them at the end of their tap line had a cider. And that isn't just not the case here, because under the umbrella of the law, like, you can't get a license for both.
Right.
So,
that's Texas for you.
Yeah. That's Texas. Hands in the air. That's Texas.
Well, that's a good question. Like, when you go to one of the breweries in town, I don't want to name one specifically, but is, I mean, now we have all these big beers that are upwards of 10, 12 or higher percentage. That's what a wine is. My fruit wines are around 10. Right. So are I don't know if there would be an issue with that, or, I mean, if you're a high alcohol content.
If the beers
content,
are that high, well, what's different? What happens is, I forget what it exactly is in the, it's because one's brewed and one's fermented. I think they just fall under different categorizations of the booze and beverage laws.
Well, you said you don't think they should be. What do you mean by that, Kumba?
No, like, as far as just what, you know, the wines and stuff.
Yeah, like, a lot of the beers are upwards of 10%, which is like a wine, but like, it's not a very similar, literally, in my perspective.
When I drink Prosecco, which I love, 10%. I drink the Shiraz, very strong red, 15%.
Mm-hmm. I honestly, you know, like, I feel like there's a difference between a 10% beer and a 10% wine, though. Like, I don't know. Or maybe it's just my tolerance.
Well, I mean, but when you go, most places will only serve maybe 10 ounces of that beer.
Right. True. It is. It comes in different glasses, different sizes, different porridge.
Because it's like, you know, it, and me, myself, I don't want to go somewhere and sit down with like a 15% like glass of a beer, because I know.
You don't want an imperial pint of 20 ounces of 16%
well,
beer.
It's, you know, because it's like, hey, I want to have more than one. So,
yeah. Same.
Right. So
don't we all?
Yes, you know,
don't
we all? So, you know, so it's like, do I want to start the party off right, or do I want to work my way up to it?
True. Yeah.
And, you know, so like with, you know, wine, I mean, I do see people just knocking back wine, but most people just sipping. And, you know,
it's a longer.
No one's
process.
Really. Yeah.
I just don't know if the beer heads and the wine heads want to be in the same room, you know.
They like, better, because we're bringing them together in this podcast right now.
I think the fact that everybody's making barley wines now just kind of opens the door for that. And then some
kicks
of the competitions, I've actually been able to bring my wines, and I've done a plum and a strawberry both. And people. At like a brew riot, they went nuts over it.
Did they?
And they were loving the fact that, because I forced carbonated and I had a big 5 gallons of it, and they were like, oh my God, it's so great to be at Brew Riot and have all these beers and then get to have a wine. Yeah. Just
also,
something totally different.
Sure. Very cool.
All right. Well before we let you go, want to pick your brain. If someone is looking to get into home brewing or home winemaking, if you guys could each just tell us a little bit about, like, what's your best advice and where they can find the best resources.
The net, you know, it's just, it's just so amazing that when you talk to people, like, every time I go to the homebrew store over there in Richardson, it's like, they always tell me, you know, we don't have the, all we had were books that were dated. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so now you can go to a forum. It's, you know, you can do chats. You can
live
send
updates.
Somebody a message.
Those books are out of date by the time they print.
Right. Yeah. And so, like, my advice would be start small, because why buy this massive system and you make shitty beer? Excuse me. You know,
the science behind it and the mechanics behind it before, you invest into just, like,
and
shiny
then,
equipment.
Right.
I like it.
And then, you know, start small. And if you want to get into it, you know, hey, you can always sell like what you have and then move up.
Totally,
but,
yeah.
You know, I see people.
There's always a market for people who want a discount of these products.
Right, and you know, I see it all the time. You know, it's like folks are jumping in head first. It's like, start off small, make a simple pale ale, a porter, but they want to make this double imperial style with marshmallows. You know,
X, Y, Z plus A, B, C.
ABV plus XYZ, is that what you said? That's funny.
And you know, this and then brewing is like easy, but to make good beer takes time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it's science going into those, like, weird beers, because it's not like they just
weird
woke up and just throw stuff together. These brewers are actually, you know, saying, hey, you need X amount of this, X amount of this. They're not just getting bags of stuff and just dumping it in like the mash.
They're doing deep research,
Right.
Absolutely.
So just start small.
What about wine? What's your best advice for starting for home winemaking?
I think start small too. Like, say, I agree with him. Just get a kit and just try one of the boxed wines.
That's what I was planning on doing.
And then maybe if you want to try from scratch, move up to fruit and then work with your additives. Just grow from there slowly but surely. And then I mean, it'll take you two or three times before you get a flavor that you like. So it could be, and from what I was told and what I read, is it's a minimum of 4 years before you even get to something that you really like.
That is what I've always heard about starting your own business, starting your own blog, starting anything, starting your own podcast. Three to 5 years. Give everything in your life 3 to 5 years to come to fruition. If it doesn't, then let it go, I guess.
Yeah. And maybe you just have fun. Don't worry about it. Yeah, you screw up, start over.
At the end of the day, you're making beer or wine.
Yeah, so. Exactly. You're making intoxicants
and
at the end of the day.
And drink while you're doing it. And you enjoy it more.
Totally worth it.
To wrap it all up in our final question, and thank you so much for your time today, guys.
You guys have been amazing. It's a pleasure talking to you.
We were just curious what each of your role models or inspiration in your fermenting or beverage making journey has been.
You want to take that one?
I think, so one of the books that I bought, which is old too, is by Terry Gary, The Joy of
Terry Gary. Why? It's so cute. I like it already.
But she's like, that's my Bible for that. And there's so many small details that are in layman's terms. It'll tell you exactly what you need. Tons of recipes. Mm-hmm. You can get online. I agree with what he was saying. And a lot of brewers are now trying wine because the equipment's interchangeable. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the sites on there where you can find recipes to all the different links online, you can find some wine recipes on there too. Mm. But I say get a good book that has, you know, tried and true recipes and things you can start with. And then start playing on your own. But honestly, my friends, the basics. My friends and family, their expressions, I think, are that's been my biggest motivation. Like,
when they sip your stuff and they're like, damn.
Yeah, they're so shocked.
This is
and
so
they're
good.
Like, I believe you made this.
I would pay for this.
Yeah. What a great feeling of that. I was strived to that one day.
That's amazing.
I can see the look on both your faces as both of you said that. It's just like elation of just like,
that felt good.
The
whole thing you were saying earlier. The whole thing earlier you're saying, if you're brewing or fermenting and you're not sharing with people, shame on you. You should.
Get it out there.
It's fun. It's social and it's a community thing. It's awesome.
It's fun, social.
Educational. All of that.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, how about you, Kumba?
Tell us about your inspirations and role models.
I mean, basically just inspired to just make good beer. And, you know, I mean, even though what I put in after the beer is done, maybe get a little complicated, but a lot of my stuff is simple. And I see a lot of people just doing these crazy recipes. They want to add this. They want to make a pale ale with like 15 grains. It's like all you need is like 3-4 grains.
And, that's totally unnecessary.
Right. And, you know, just like keep it simple and then, you know, share thoughts and stuff with, you know, friends and family, you know, like brewing friends who make beer and stuff. I, you know, talk to them and we share tips and stuff like that. And so, just
community.
Yeah. Just have fun with it, you know, can. That's all.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I actually, the first time I had quite a few, I invited a bunch of friends over and we all brought appetizers and little cheese boards. Yeah. And
that
then
sounds
I had,
like exactly what we
I doing. Made tasting cards so that they could note like what kind of notes of whatever they tasted.
That never worked with me. You know, I would give out beers and stuff. It's like, hey, tell me what you think. And,
I get buzzed.
And,
yeah.
You know, guys were like, oh man, beer was good. It's like comments, tips. It's like, nah, man, it was good.
My yoga certification, yoga trainings, we're not allowed to say like, or even in the sorority stuff, we're not allowed to say like, that was good conversation. Or you have to be more specific than that. You're like literally not allowed to be vague.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you guys again for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Absolute flipping pleasure to have you guys in studio today and learn about the intricacies of beer making and wine making at home. And I can't wait when I get back to the country to do that as well. I'm going to give you a call, girl.
Absolutely.
All right. Yes, do.
We raise glass to you.
Yeah.
Cheers,
guys.
Even though mine's empty, so.
Well, we're going to remedy that. Thank you guys for sticking with us. Tune in for the next episode of Grapes and Grain.
Next episode.
Thanks for listening to Grapes and Grain Podcast. If you'd like to be featured on our future listener mail segment, please email any questions, comments, or anecdotes to grapesandgrain@gmail.com. That's grapes, the letter N, grain@gmail.com.
You can also follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Grapes and Grain Podcast. Remember, that's grapes plural and grain singular.
Find us online at grapesandgrainpodcast.com to see blog posts that go more in depth to each episode. You can also download or stream the podcast there.
And of course, find us on Patreon. patreon.com/grapesandgrain if you'd like to pledge a monthly contribution. And a huge thank you to Jack and Dorothy Studios for having us in today. We couldn't do it without you, Ben.
Thanks so much for listening to our podcast today. Cheers.
Cheers.
What you drinking?